We had one of the most beautiful communities when I moved here that you could imagine.
Condos were out on my old turf. For what it's worth, soul got left in the earth. On a search, I stood in front of Compton where the Hudson building spoke first and said, I was here.
You're listening to a special podcast release from The Final Straw Radio, airing weekly on WSFMLP in Asheville, North Carolina, as well as a few other stations around the country. On June 1st, 2016, Jeanette Shannon and members of Detroit Eviction Defense held a block party in a neighborhood in Detroit. Jeanette, a resident of this neighborhood for decades, and her teenage son have been in immediate danger of eviction due to legal wranglings and financial violence done by the Vulture Investor Fund, sometimes known as Thor Real Estate, to which Jeanette has paid tens of thousands of dollars in fees to cover the company's tax debts, has had her backyard mortgaged by the company multiple times, and has been offered potentially fraudulent deeds and other paperwork. The block party was well attended by housing activists from a plethora of community organizations from around Detroit, as well as folks from the block. Today, June 2nd, marks the beginning of the house defense for Jeanette's house, in which community members and activists plan to resist eviction through solidarity. More on this house defense and the four-year history of Detroit Eviction Defense could be found at DetroitEvictionDefense.org. For other episodes of our show, The Final Straw Radio, you can check out thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. And for the current episode, visit ashevillefm.org/the-final-straw. You can contact us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. I'm speaking with Jeanette. Jeanette is a resident of Detroit, Michigan, and she and her teenage son are currently in danger of eviction from their house. Thank you so much for talking, Jeanette.
You're welcome.
And we're also joined by Miriam, an activist working with the group Detroit Eviction Defense, or DED. Thanks a lot.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Jeanette, would you tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, my name is Jeanette Shannon. I'm 45 years old. I have two children. My daughter is 25, married with my first grandchild, and my son is 16. I've been in the area that I'm in for almost 40 years, since I was like 9 years old.
And that's like Detroit proper or just around the like surrounding areas?
No, actually, I've been in this area. I've been in Detroit for 45 years, but I've been in this area for almost 40 years.
Wow. She's talking about this neighborhood.
Can you tell listeners a little bit about the neighborhood, what it's called and what it's like, who lives there?
I sure can. It's right across the street from the hospital. When I moved over in the area in the early 80s, it was a very biracial area. When I came up off a street called Avery, which is off of West Glen Boulevard. So moving to this area was pretty much a great, so it would be.
Step up.
It was a step up. The bottom line is the area, when the market went down in Detroit, the area kind of, plummeted a little bit because they were allowing these investors to come in, buy these houses. And, you kind of watch some of the people that's had their houses since I was a kid, kind of lose them to either property taxes, mortgages, just things I've just never seen before up until this point now. The lady on the street that's, she's been in a house like 65 years and she's lost her house to property taxes.
That's incredible. How does the city just, because it doesn't have the industry input, they start raising property taxes on everyone? Or how does that work? Why did that happen?
I don't think they ever. You want to speak on it?
Yeah, I would like to say a little something. This area is a very traditional working class community. And for the last maybe past 50, 60 years, these are people who have worked in the auto plants. They've been able to raise their families on the wages, on the union wages that they received in the plants. And so they were able to purchase homes and raise their families in nice neighborhoods, this is a nice neighborhood. It's very traditional. It's very conservative in some ways. And when the auto plants closed down and left basically the country, in terms of globalization and, for jobs in other countries at lower wages, that so many of the people here lost their jobs. And so that income is not being shared down into the next generations. Excuse me, huh? Yes. The assessments are too high. Yes, they are. With the housing, well, I don't know what you call it, but like the housing bubble around 2008, prices of houses rose dramatically, and the city reassessed at that time so that all the houses were assessed at very inflated values. So that, for example, a $20,000 house would be assessed at maybe $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. And these are what the taxes are based on now, because the city has not reassessed even when the property values crashed. So you have houses sometimes that where the taxes are more than what the house is worth. And that's been combined with an 18% interest rate and back fees. And when all of those fees and prices and big money come hit a family that does not have the income that they used to have, then they're subject to lose their house to property tax.
And it's very interesting that you speak on that, because in 2010-11, when I saw the first tax bill on this home, I couldn't believe it was at almost $3,400. $3,400.
Tax bill.
That's incredible.
Yes, that's incredible. And so you have, I mean, I'm trying to put, Jeanette's story is dramatic in and of itself, but in context, she's one of so many that are facing the same problem of trying to maintain a shelter with, you know, for herself and for her family, and finding herself losing jobs or being wages going down and being not being able to maintain the home because the pressures from the government and the pressures from the corporate interests and the banks are forcing people out of their homes. And what the media is saying is like, well, if you can't pay your taxes, you should lose your home. That's what the media message is. And that's allowing all of the developers to come and buy up Detroit, basically.
And my story was like kind of unique, because with me, I actually, so to speak, pay cash for my home. And I was just beat out of the house all the way around the board.
Yep.
Where if I owed back old property taxes, they would have taken the house from me a long time ago, where this real estate investor owned the property and hadn't paid taxes in 8 years, and the county just kept giving it back and forth to them. And they were able to get a multitude of homes. And I just want to know, how is this helping Detroit when you allow investors to come in and take something that we work hard for to provide for our children, our family? We deserve to have a decent place to live. Why are we not entitled to that? How is it that somebody from China, somebody from Germany, can go online and purchase a home that they've never seen before with a family of, say, five or six in it, and just take it over? And then that family's kicked out in the streets.
And the court system, the judges, the lawyers, the whole system is designed to push the people out, because the needs, so-called, of the corporate developers is to move people out, take the land, take the homes, and develop it for their use and for their benefit.
The developers are coming here and getting these houses $500 a piece at the auction.
Yes.
Now, my question is, why don't they allow these families? Or here's the bigger question. The bigger question is, what the grant money was given out, what, 3 years ago? How do these people have lost their homes, knew nothing about getting help for underprivileged families to get their property taxes paid, yet they have lost their homes? And someone's coming in and purchased it at $500, put it on a land contract, charged $43,000 for a home, let you about pay the home off, and then give you a fake deed or find a reason to put you out? Now, how fair is that?
It's not fair at all. And that's part of the corruption that's endemic to the system. And that's what's going on.
In your situation, I was told that you paid off your house three times over, basically, to Thor Real Estate. Is that right?
Yes.
Tell me how much you have paid.
Let me just give you a general breakdown, okay? 2010, I saw them on the internet. They said, hey, give me $1,000 down on the home, $570 a month. $400 for ownership, $170 goes toward property taxes. So maybe less than a year later, I get a knock at the door. They tell my representative, hey, if you don't pay $693 or whatever, you're going to have to get out of the home. I said, well, why is it $693? Well, your house is assessed for way more, you know, than what it's worth. The value went up, so the taxes went up. And I'm going, that couldn't be right because the market has crashed. So at this point, I said, well, you know, I got to call around and get some help. So I went into a Chapter 13 for about a year. Converted over into a 7, went and got what I thought was a real estate attorney, not the attorney that I have now, but another attorney.
So these, for anyone who's listening, this is like a bankruptcy process, right?
Right.
Chapter 13, okay.
Yes, so what happened was they came up with a settlement cash offer of $14,000. They said, well, Jeanette, give us $7,500. So me being Jeanette, thinking, hey, this is okay with the attorney I got. I go get them cashier checks. They say pay us $350. We just want the remaining balance, Jeanette, to be paid off before December the 31st of 2013. 2 weeks later, there's a big yellow sign in the yard. When I say a big yellow sign, I mean huge. It's a foreclosure sign. There was a note tacked on to a light pole that says foreclosure. But the kicker was, it wasn't my address. So when they stamped another letter on my door, I said, 17135 Sansbury, this is not my address. So I gave it to the neighbor next door. Well, I'll pause that. I go to the water company, say, hey, look, I need to get water turned on, you know, in my name. They said, ma'am, someone was just here a week ago to have all the bills sent to California. A week later, I received over 400 water bills to my home of different residents of the city of Detroit. So by August the 11th of 2013, I had given them $9,600 of the $14,000. Now, this is not including the money that I paid them 2 years prior to me even coming into a settlement agreement. So then I have like almost $16,000 in escrow, and basically the judge decides I'm going to give them $5,400 to pay back on taxes that they had since 2008. How in the world did the city of Detroit or Wayne County allow this company to get away with back owing taxes? And then come to find out the house was sold to me, the tax statement that I have says that my backyard was included in the parcel, and it in 4-8. Well, they somehow divided the parcel, came up with another address. The backyard had multiple mortgages, almost $300,000 in mortgages.
On the backyard.
And let's not forget the important part. They gave me a special warranty deed that doesn't exist in the state of Michigan. Took me to court and said I missed the payment. And the judge, I sent a certified mail to cash it, just so you know. And the judge said, you know what? In January the 7th of 2014, we're going to make it simple. Give her back her money. You get out of the house. Give her $350 back. Ma'am, you have a nice day. So this has been a long, hard fight.
So as someone who, I don't own any property, I've never owned any property myself, can you talk about what Thor Real Estate is, where they're based out of?
Thor is based out of California. It's a real estate company, LLC, which has changed their name 5 different times. And each time they change their name in the state of Michigan, in Detroit, their water bill debt is forgiven each time they come with a new name. So my question to you is, if they're forgiving it from the debt with the company, how in the heck are they still leaving these arrearages on the houses? Because once the water bill goes up so high, it automatically sends the house into tax foreclosure if you have not paid the back owing taxes.
And how can they keep buying houses when they owe back taxes?
And another question, right. How did they allow them to keep buying taxes when they owe all that back on money. But it was very interesting because Wayne County Treasurer actually gave me a printout. And with the printout, it showed how they were going back and forth. They said I signed a deed in lieu. And the Wayne County Treasurer actually pointed it out all nice and beautiful and circled it for me and said, well, in order for you to have signed this deed in lieu, you have to first have been given the property, and you were never given the property. So they've been running off of a land contract when actuality it was supposed to be like a cash settlement deal. And if they were going to run off the land contract, then that's an even bigger problem because you never gave me the forfeiture process, which would have allowed me 90 more days in the home.
So basically, this company is flouting the laws and it's changing its names and avoiding any of the responsibilities while taking all the profits of owning a property and charging you in the meantime for all these fees while trying to basically finagle it out of your hands.
For all of the houses, and it's a scam. They just keep putting people in these houses, taking their money. 36th District Court had over 1,000 cases. Cleveland, Ohio, ran them out of there. They have cases here in Grand Rapids, Pontiac. I mean, like, all over. People were actually on Thor's website a couple years ago saying they were a scam, they were a ripoff, they were paying these property taxes. Somebody showed up at the door. They kicked them out the house. They were trying to call and ask people, hey, let's get together. Let's do a class action suit. I mean, it's really bad. You know, can you imagine you're doing the right thing, you know, providing a roof over your family's head, and you got to come home and tell your child or tell your children or your parents or whoever may be living in the house, hey, we have nowhere to go. We're homeless. And this company basically stole all of our money. They're liars, they're thieves, and they're cheats. And they need to get the hell out of Detroit under Thor LLC, Homestar Trading, Lakes Management,
and Nation Star.
Oh, and then I end up with mortgage statements coming to the house. And then I get this very beautiful letter from Thor Real Estate LLC saying that they no longer had interest in this property and that it was conveyed over to Homestar Trading. And then all of a sudden, the last quarter in court, they come with a letter dated May the 16th of 2016 saying, oh, it was a mistake. She got that letter, along with the mortgage statements that I got. Now, how do you get mortgage statements on a land contract?
Backyard.
So they subdivided your backyard and sold off the portions or attained different tax values for the backyard portions?
The backyard is sitting at the land bank. The land bank owns the backyard,
they say.
Because the backyard had multiple mortgages, and even the mortgage document shows how they go from my address to another address that I can't even say whether it existed or not. From what the neighbors are saying, it might have existed over 60-something years because the lady explained to me she's been here since 72, and she's never seen it, and that the backyard has always been a part of the parcel. So I'm just, like, flabbergasted at the fact, depressed, shocked. If it wasn't for Detroit Eviction Defense, I don't know where I would be because morally they've been holding me together.
So yesterday was a block party hosted by yourself and members of Detroit Eviction Defense. Can you tell listeners a little bit about the group and how the party went?
The party was beautiful. It was well planned. I had the best support ever. They became to be a family. It's not just an activist group for me. It's family. And I'm going to tell you what I shared with them earlier. As a kid, I was taught, you can count your friends on one hand. Okay? You quickly learn who your friends is when you don't have food, light, gas, water, or shelter. And when I didn't have shelter, they ran to my defense quick. When I was crying like a baby and gasping for air yesterday, they got here so fast and stayed with me. And you know, this is very emotional, especially me having a 16-year-old son. He's not understanding, well, we did nothing wrong. You were paying. How did the judge just give away all the money like that? How do they just beat us out of our money? Why do we have to worry about our things going in a dumpster? Why are they letting this company do this? Who do this company know that they're well connected to that's allowing them to be above the law? Because where I come from, this is not normal behavior. And we are taught that the law will protect you. And I'm going to tell you, I'm not feeling protected at all. I went to my congresswoman, okay? I went to my state, went to my senator. They sent me over to the Wayne County commissioner, and they all bounced me around so much. I'm dizzy, my head is bleeding, and I feel like I went to prison, okay? It's just not a good feeling. If you can't depend on the people that is leading your city and your state to help you when you tell them, hey, they're crooks, they were ran out, this is what's done to me and my son, we're facing eviction, can you help me? And they say, well, hey, they're saying you signed a land contract. Excuse me, I was given a phony deed. The Wayne County Treasurer has pointed out, in order for you to have signed this deed in lieu, you have to first be given a property. I was never given a property. And I end up having to find a whole nother attorney for an appeal. And then to this attorney who ripped me off, who did no real estate law, who is a bankruptcy attorney, who sent me text messages, told me she was going to return my money, and then said, well, you shouldn't have signed it. I trust you. You are officer of the court. Shame on you. That makes you as bad as Thor for ripping me and my family off. And just so you know, that's public record, so you can go back and get the name of that person.
So you found that the city and court officials have all failed you in the process of protecting you as a taxpaying citizen of your community. And you know that they've done this to a lot of other folks too, but can you talk about like the sort of community that you found with the folks from the Detroit eviction defense? And like, has that made you feel empowered?
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a great group of people. They fight for a worthy cause. They don't want to see anyone homeless. They don't want to see anyone taken advantage of. They just want justice to be served. If you ask me, these are the people that should have been in office running the city. Because, let me tell you something.
No, we don't want that.
So, you know, what I'm saying is this. You get people who actually care about people staying in their homes. When you go to your congressperson as a constituent and you take all of this proof and you hear these words come out of their mouth, this should have been stopped a long time ago.
They all say that.
The feds should have been involved.
They all say that.
We are only federal.
It's always somebody else's fault.
Well, at what point do you look at the documents and you get on the phone and you say, hey, someone came in and I think, you know, this would be a great federal case.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand. That's all.
Yeah.
What do we pay taxes for? I'm just trying to understand. You know, I know when I was younger, I made a fellow in my head and got amnesia for a moment, but I have great sense now. And this just doesn't make sense to me at all.
No, it doesn't make sense. Let me say a little bit about Detroit Eviction Defense. We started about 4 years ago, and we started out of the Direct Action Committee of Occupy Detroit. That's our origin. And we took on the housing issues and the questions of housing justice because we saw how it was decimating the whole city of Detroit. We felt that it was a racial attack, and we also felt that it was a class-based attack. The premise of our group is that we're not social workers. We don't get paid. We look to work with people that want to fight. And we expect the people that are working with us to fight with us. And that's what's happened, is that in the course of working with people, the people whose houses have been won, have come and joined our group and worked to save other people's houses. Over almost 50. At our fourth year celebration last 2 months ago, we celebrated over 50 different struggles, many of which have did result in a victory. But again, it's not so much, it is the group, but it's also the people in the group that take it upon themselves to work with each other and to help each other. And it's that kind of solidarity and that kind of mutual defense and mutual support that we promote as a political alternative to the system as a whole. So, and this is, we see this as building community self-defense. We see it as Detroiters standing up for themselves and to try to push back against this whole narrative that's been going on in the city of basically white people coming in, taking over the downtown, raising the rents, raising the prices, and pushing out Detroiters. It's gentrification, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how the racial, like, the demographics of the city have changed since the deindustrialization, and who you're pointing to with these white folks? Are they, like, individual, like, quote-unquote, like, urban homesteaders, or are they investment companies based out of San Francisco that are mostly financialized white folks? Or
I would say it's both. I would say that it's developers and investment companies that are providing the money. People like Dan Gilbert, like Mike Ilitch, like Roger Penske, those are three of the big names that have been buying up properties downtown, midtown. And what they want the neighborhoods for is parks, water reservoirs, and things like that. So there's been a campaign to strip services from the neighborhoods, that is streetlights, police response, 911 response, is all gone down in the neighborhoods, and it's gone up in the city center. The city, people like Dan Gilbert, who owns Quicken Loans, provide subsidies to the people that he hires, which is a lot of young white people, yes, from the suburbs, who come into the city. They work for him. They're given subsidies on their apartments. And what they have done is taken over the city for their own benefit and for their own culture, so to speak. You have graffiti artists that are native to Detroit who are facing jail time, for example, for painting free water on one of the water towers. And you also have graffiti artists who are brought in from the suburbs to paint graffiti on Detroit landmarks. Mm-hmm. For example, there was a mural of Coleman Young and Malcolm X right at the heart of Eastern Market. Last week when I drove past, it was covered with a blue BLU, the electronic vapor ad, with a young white woman stepping out of a car with her cigarette in her mouth, her vape in her mouth. So that's, and we see that as an attack on the city. Detroit has never been entirely African-American, although it's majority African-American. It's had a majority African-American political system, a mayor, council, that type of thing, which was taken over by the state in the form of emergency management, so that even though the state of Michigan voted against having emergency managers, the governor has appointed emergency managers over Detroit, over Flint, over Pontiac, over Benton Harbor. In other words, over all the majority black or African American cities.
And so the emergency manager is, like, there's the assumption that there's an emergency situation, that the city has defaulted on its funding and can't responsibly take care of itself, and therefore they remove the any democratic pretense that they had and install a technocrat, right?
Exactly right. And we currently have an emergency manager over the Detroit public school system as well, which they're in the process of eliminating. And all of these emergency managers have given themselves very high paychecks. We're talking like $800,000 and $400,000. I mean, big money that's going to the lawyers, that's going to the managers themselves. While, and the banks are getting paid.
represented the bank in the bankruptcy, and he was the emergency
manager lawyer as well. That's right.
Conflict of
interest. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and conflict of interest.
Totally. So, but they are running the city, and what they're doing is running it for their own benefit, and they claim that it's development. Boy, isn't Detroit developing? Isn't Detroit doing great? Well, no, it's not doing great. It's destroying its neighborhoods is what it's doing. And it's trying to push the people out. And at the same time, tax money is being used to do what? They're building a hockey stadium in downtown Detroit. Isn't that what we need?
And we're subsidized by the taxpayers.
Subsidized by the taxpayers, absolutely.
So if you were to use the model of like Naomi Klein's shock doctrine thing, would you say like the deindustrialization and the housing bubble created this shock that allowed for finance capital to come in and sort of restructure the city and bleach it?
Absolutely. Now, I haven't read her book, but I've heard interviews with her, and I agree with her very much. And I do tie it to the globalization of industry, and I tie it to the deindustrialization, and I tie it to the drive of capital to make more money, to make money out of whatever they can.
The housing stock, so the marketplace, so the housing will be more expensive.
Did you hear that?
Barely.
This is Shep talking. Say it louder.
One of the things they want to do is to reduce the housing stock, which is plentiful in Detroit, because they're buying houses for $500 in big lots and groups.
Mm-hmm.
They want to reduce the available housing stock so that housing will cost more.
Right, so they can increase the price.
Yes.
And yeah. I just want to say this. You know, lately, you've been saying this quite a bit. You know, Congressperson introduced something to me called the invisible line. Well, I guess that invisible line is supposed to be where some of these people don't realize they don't own their backyard. And I've seen a couple of the cases on the news where there was this gentleman, I believe in Westland. Well, his home is attached to the garage. Wayne County goes out and put a foreclosure letter on his garage. Okay? They foreclose on the garage that's attached to the home. Now, he says, well, what are you talking about? My taxes are including my mortgage. I'm not behind on my mortgage. So he has to go and get money to buy his garage back. And now it's been at least two more cases, but it's no telling how many more cases are out there. And I just want to say this. Now, do we keep the houses assessed for what they were 3-4 years ago so that we can push these families out and let these out-of-town investors come in, get them for $500 and make $300,000, $400,000 off of each property in the long run because, say, it's close to downtown? So, to me,
well, we're demanding reassessment of all properties.
Exactly. And I was hearing something, I don't know if it's called PER form or
is that?
It's a form that is supposed to reassess the house of what the value is now.
Okay, so it's a reassessment form.
And from my understanding, every home in Detroit is supposed to have had, or in Wayne County is supposed to have had, one of these forms filled out.
It's not happened.
This is what Loveland Technologies was telling us. And my question to them was, well, do you have the form? And they said, no, we don't have the form, but what you can do is direct them to the Housing Coalition. So, and then we're supposed to let them know, hey, look, you know, you can go and get payment arrangements. Well, here's just food for thought, right? If they had the money to pay their taxes in the first place, they would not be in tax foreclosure, right?
Right.
So why not send out a letter saying, with that tax bill, hey, if you make up under a certain amount, there's help out here for you. Or when they're doing the commercials on television,
Why not say, hey, we got money out here for low-income families. How do you qualify? Call this number here.
They don't do that.
Well, that's my whole point.
They don't do that.
Because they're not interested in it.
In essence, what I'm saying is the system is set up for us to fail here.
Right.
And it's designed for the city to make money hand over fist. Because there was an article on Thor. I actually read it a couple years ago. Detroit Free Press has multiple articles on them. And they were actually in court. Now, I want to say they paid maybe something like, I don't know, I'm just going to throw out a number, $43,000 for the home, right? For all of these homes, say like maybe 100 homes. Well, the bottom line is that they sold the homes to another investor for $240,000, right? And the investor gets ready, bought these homes, I guess, without looking at them. So he sends this guy out to look at the house, go, oh, my God, some of these houses don't have windows in them. They don't have this. They don't have that. They take them to federal court, win back all their money. So at that point, it was an article saying, look, this company owes over $100,000 in water bill, over $90,000 in unpaid property taxes. So once again, now let's just do the math. Now, the average home shouldn't be paying no more than maybe $1,000 a year for property taxes, especially in a lot of the areas in which they're grabbing these homes.
Yeah, if you live in like Malibu or something, that like I could see paying a lot in property taxes.
Yeah, but this Detroit is not Malibu.
It's not by far, you know. So at what point do we stand up? And when I say do we stand up, I mean, like, the people that are leading the city and say, you know what? This tax auction online crap is not working. We have people in China that is owning these homes that have assigned a property management. People don't even know who they're sending their money to. Then they find out the house is in tax foreclosure. So then they're out of their money. You know, and then it's as simple as them just going and getting another name and coming back under another name to get the same houses that they lost.
So, Jeanette, you're talking about, you talked about the idea that right now is the time to stand up. You just had the block party. Today is the first day of the active housing defense. Can you talk about, like, who's around and what that defense is expecting? What are you all expecting to happen?
Yeah, I'll say a little bit about that. We had the block party yesterday to kick off the home defense. And the idea behind the home defense is that, well, let me back up. Detroit has a law that a dumpster has to be sent out 24 hours before the eviction takes place in order for the resident belongings to be put into a dumpster and not on the street. So that's a Detroit law. So what we do as a home defense is to try to prevent the dumpster from being able to get to the home. So we have cars parked on the street. We have we built a little fence at the entrance of the yard, you know, and we have like rain barrels that say eviction free zone. And we have people that are prepared to maybe turn their cars and block the street, put out emergency text so that we can get a large number of people here, including the UAW. At our block party yesterday, we had a very wide response from different groups. So it was Detroit Eviction Defense. It was Detroiters Resisting Emergency Management. It was people that are dealing with the water situation. It was Moratorium Now. It was National Lawyers Guild. It was Critical Moment. It was a range of organizations and a range of individuals that were willing to come out and say, yes, we support this, and we will be here when you need us. What we have is a sign-up sheet with shifts. So we're asking people to sign up for two-hour shifts. From 6 in the morning to 6 at night, And we use this time to organize, to talk to the neighbors. People come by, they want to know what's going on here, and it gives us an opportunity to talk to them and to enlist their help. And this is what we do. So we find that the home defenses are a really good way to organize, because it's something practical that people can do. You can paint a sign, or you can draw with chalk on the sidewalk, just come and eat and drink a coffee with us in the morning, whatever. And we find that this builds a solidarity, and it builds a network of support that when the dumpster does come, we're confident that we can bring enough people out that will make them maybe stop a minute and say, maybe I don't want to park this dumpster here today.
And that's our plan. I'd imagine there's a lot of lessons that you've learned over the 50 past attempts to resist over the last 4 years. Can you talk about some of those lessons, and also how folks in the neighborhood have reacted, at least to the block party and to this first day of resistance?
I feel like we got a very positive response. For the last couple of weeks, we've been maybe 3 weeks. We've been canvassing the neighborhood. We've been, going door to door, passing out flyers, talking to people, explaining to them what the situation is, and asking for their support. And part of the reason we do that is so that people can understand that we respect the fact that this is their neighborhood, and this is ultimately their defense. We don't do anything that would go against what Jeanette's wishes are as a homeowner. We don't go against anything that the neighbors would not want on their block. We try to work with the people on the block and the people in the neighborhood. And that's something that we've learned from the past, how crucial the initial neighborhood support is. Because without asking people, we're coming in on their land, on their territory, so to speak. And that's not a helpful thing. One of the things that we've learned from past defense is ways to engage all levels of community support. So, for example, in our last defense, which was the Hernandez family, they had three daughters from the ages of like 17 to 10. And those three girls took leaflets into their school. They organized their teachers to come support.
They came to the house.
They helped organize. And when by the neighbors seeing the children actively organizing, broke down a lot of the barriers that they felt, well, maybe this group is worth going and checking out. We had a Halloween party that ended up marching down the main street of the Southwest area that was led by the children. They were handing out candy and shouting, no eviction, save our home, anyway. So it was very exciting and like that. So we combined demonstrations with gatherings, with leafleting, with discussion, with all the different elements that it's going to take to make a community aware and able to defend itself. Because this is really what we're building, is community self-defense.
That's awesome. Jeanette, can you talk, and thanks for that response, Miriam. That was great.
Yes.
Jeanette, can you talk about your neighbors? Like, what do they look like? How long have they lived in the community? And have you been seeing this same sort of thing that's happening to you happen to them too?
5 years.
Well, let me tell you, I had three awesome neighbors come by here. They had been on the street since like 1972. They were very supportive. The wife said, I remember you. I came down here. I knocked on your door. We went over to the hospital. Yeah, I said, yes, ma'am. And I kind of explained to her, and I was explaining that the backyard was at the land bank and that the gentleman next door was trying to buy the backyard from the land bank. So you get some neighbors that are good, because my neighbor next door says that the city of Detroit is stupid. And if they're stupid enough to sell him my backyard, he's going to buy it. And he wants in because he wants to be able to sue the city. Okay? Now, my question to you is, why would they go to the land bank? Why would the land bank go to my neighbor and present him with an offer and not knock on the door to see if I was a renter, a homeowner, or if I was interested, but instead he gives me a full print out of the deal. They only wanted $100 for the backyard, a $300,000 mortgage on it. And it's like every step of the way he's been reporting, well, they're out there doing this and they're out there doing that. And I just want to tell him thank you, because he's doing a phenomenal job with getting the word out that we're not going any damn where. I'm fighting for my home, and no, he can't have my backyard. What is wrong with him? That was the first thing I touched on, was a neighbor that was very supportive.
Right.
Very, very supportive. And she was so supportive. She was in total agreement with what I was saying. You know, as a neighbor, you're supposed to stick together, and you want to see your neighbors stay in their home, not get them out. And she said, give me your number. If there's anything we can do, I got the corner house. You guys can block it off from there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, so you get some that are like very, very supportive, and then you get some that, and I got to say, like, I only had one that wasn't supportive, and it was a gentleman that wanted the backyard, but everyone else has been awesome. Like, they really rock. I have a very nice neighborhood. I stay next door, you know, to a bar. They've been supportive. The store that's like right next door to me, they've been knowing me like since I was a little girl, and they like, anything we can do to help you, come in, let us know. You know, we have your back.
The pharmacy came and brought us a 24 pack of water.
The pharmacy came and brought water.
And the owners from the Teresa's, right?
Yeah, they came, and they also said, it's unfair that they took your money. We're going to try to come up with a donation for you. And I just thought, hey, that was the best thing ever. It makes you feel good. You know, oftentimes people reflect on the negativity in Detroit, and they never talk about the positive. Well, I'm here to talk about the positive. Obviously, these investors see something good in Detroit, and they want a piece of it.
And
all I'm saying to you is, the people of Detroit that are the residents, that are the heart and the soul of Detroit, we feel like Detroit is worth saving too. And that's why we fight to save our homes. Now, 9,000 homes are due to go in foreclosure. The original date was the 7th. They extended it until the 30th. Mm-hmm. You have less than 100 people that's going out. How in the hell are they going to hit 9,000 homes in less than 1 week?
They're not.
So that means we are being what? Set up for failure.
That's right.
And what are they going to do to change that? Why didn't you send out some letters? You know how they send people out to put the big old signs on the door to say, hey, your house going into tax foreclosure? Why didn't they send these same people out to say, we can help you?
Because they don't want to help. Because the city government is in cahoots with the corporations and the banks to take the city for their own benefit and their own use. And that's what's happening.
And I just want to say, do you know, it broke my heart to know that, you know, as a child, you're taught that, hey, if somebody do something to you, you know, you can go to a officer. You can go to... And what I was doing was going to officers of the court when I was trying to get the prosecutors and everybody, you know, to listen. But everybody kept going back to the land contract. And the bottom line is the people who were able to help and not look at the bigger picture, it's not just me that this has happened to. They brushed it under a rug, you know, made me feel like a bug. They stepped on me.
Yeah, they did.
Just think about this. If I didn't have the money in 2013 to get the first attorney, you know, to buy me time to fight this out, where would I be? It cost me my business that I was due to open. Mm-hmm. You know, I've lost a lot in the process just to be where I am. You know, it make you doubt yourself. But I can say this is where the support
the DED comes in and remind you, you did nothing wrong.
So where do the folks that get evicted or go through these foreclosure processes, where do they end up moving off to? Because a lot of this, what y'all have been talking about is people being priced out or forced out through weird tax laws and like shell games of LLCs changing names and foreclosing on people's backyards and the city and county allowing this to happen. What happens to the members of those communities when they get pushed out of town?
They go with their families. They go from being homeowners to being tenants. Detroit used to be one of the highest homeowner cities in the nation. It is not anymore because it is now majority renters.
I have a prime example for you, right? So I pay over $25,000 out, okay? Now, in return, I get, like I said, a fake deed, right? So the judge said, we'll give you $3,000. Well, $3,000 didn't make me happy when you took all my money, and I ended up still being homeless. Yeah. And on top of you giving me the $3,000, then the transmission goes in the car. And then on top of that, the power steering goes. So I need to be able to get my son to school. I need to be able to go to school myself, try to find a job. So the bottom line is you got all my money. I'm stuck with nothing. And it's like, well, at this point, where do I even get money to move at? And on top of that, you know, just to get a place is like $2,000.
Because you need all that back money.
Yeah. And then you have to, nowadays, even when you move into a place and you transfer the service, they charge you a security deposit on lights and gas depending on how the situation went with the last tenant that was there.
Or your credit history.
Right.
Exactly. But no, not even on, no, not the credit, the credibility of the person that was there before.
Of the
place. So if somebody didn't pay electricity for a period of time, then suddenly it's like,
and still have to pay a security deposit.
Right. Based on previous tenancy.
So if you had a person that never paid their lights and gas before and they view you as a high risk, or if they ever did
$100,000.
Yeah, or if they ever did a theft on the home, well, guess who paid for that? A person like me that was doing the right thing that lost her home or that could be forced out of their home. You know, it's sad. And that's where the depression kicks in. You know, kick me out if I'm not doing the right thing.
Yeah, but you feel like you've been doing everything right and getting hit. And that's what's happening.
Hard.
And Jeanette is not by herself. This is happening like a steamroller to the city of Detroit. This past season, there was 33,000 tax foreclosures in the Wayne County, just one county.
That's incredible.
33,000, the highest in the nation.
So let me say this to you.
This is her story. You can write it large.
2013, I go to Wayne County, and I have all, you know, the documents, and I say, hey, look, I need your help. I just got ripped off of this company. I paid them cash for the home. They're ripping off the city of Detroit. They're not paying you guys taxes. You guys have them listed every year. He said, you have two parcels. Well, you knew all the time that it was a mortgage out there floating and that it was getting ready to go to the land bank. And never said not one thing to me. I had the document saved in my phone. They gave me a copy of it. And I don't even think they even paid attention to what was on the top of it. It was they took it out of litigation because it was pending an investigation due to the fraud. But on the other hand, somebody went in and gave Thor payment arrangements to get caught up on the house that they pulled out of tax foreclosure. Pulled it out of tax foreclosure for that. Now,
but not for you.
And so I said to them, well, hey, you guys got this program going on that says that if you are in a home and the owner is in tax foreclosure, I'm supposed to have been able to take it over. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, no, you need to go see the land bank. And I couldn't understand what was going on, but they never said.
Because it's a runaround.
Yeah, they never said to me, hey, this is at the land bank. It took for them to come out, want to get rid of what was going on initially, which was the mortgages and everything and how the house was being deeded back and forth. And instead, they go to my neighbor to say, hey, look, you want to buy this backyard? And give them all the paperwork.
That's right.
And that's just wrong. And it took for him to say, look, neighbor, we can come together on getting some money. We can get paid. I said, I don't want to get paid. I want my home. I want my money. I want them to do what's right. And this is who y'all took my backyard and gave it to.
So he can lawsuit you, is that crazy?
Well, he wants a lawsuit the city and the county.
Right,
You know, so it's like,
it's just opportunism.
Yeah, he said he's an opportunist. And he see it. And so what really hurt my soul was as VED was setting up, they had their backs turned. And I'm talking to the owner's grandson yesterday from Teresa's. He eased by everybody and come and say, I just want to let you know, they told me to wait until you leave and then I can put my stuff over here. Now, I was told by my attorney that the land bank was holding it up. But this man here is saying different and that he has paperwork to prove it.
And you don't know what to believe. You really don't.
You know, but I think it's important that they know
what
he said and how he viewed them as being stupid. You know, and that's just bad when you can just sit out there and blatantly say it. Let me just tell you this. So when they put the 17135 address on, I had given it to the investigators from the Wayne County Fraud Deed Unit. An investigator called me and said they sold you the house with multiple mortgages on. We found it or whatever. We getting ready to do X, Y, and Z. And he was moved, and I never heard from him again.
They lost the paperwork.
They say the lady told us the paperwork was lost. And it was boxes of evidence, and the evidence was lost.
For folks that are in a similar situation to yourself, who are paying huge amounts to investment companies or banks, but unable to keep above water and facing eviction when the city and the county are just stonewalling you, what would you say to them? What made you decide to take the fight for your home, to direct action, and to work with this group?
Because I don't have $25,000 or better in cash just to give away and to be homeless. That's crazy. It's absurd. And to the people out there that have mortgages, you know, I tell them to get on Google, to research, you know, to see who's offering help. You know, now when DED fights, they investigate. They won't just take on any old case. You know, it's not the run of a mill where any old Joe Blow can come because they're not paying their bills. They have to see that, you know, it's an unjust situation. They won't just go out there and put themselves on a limb because Tammy Sue has not been paying her rent or her mortgage.
And that Tammy Sue is willing to fight. Like, so Tammy Sue has been doing it right and is willing to stick it out, right?
Absolutely.
Is willing to fight.
Because it takes courage to be able to fight. A lot of times people have too much pride to say anything and they wait until it's too late.
True.
So where can people in the listening audience find out more about Detroit Eviction Defense and about this case?
Our website, DetroitEvictionDefense.org. The main thing that we would do is encourage people not to move, not to give in, to try to find people in their area that will stand with them and fight with them, and to fight for their homes, that it can be done. And that's what I would say.
Hey, that's Santa right there. That's it.
Well, thank you so much to both of you for chatting, and Jeanette, I wish you the best of luck, and your story is inspiring.
Thank you.
More on this house defense and the four-year history of Detroit Eviction Defense could be found at DetroitEvictionDefense.org. For other episodes of our show, The Final Straw Radio, you can check out thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. And for the current episode, visit ashevillefm.org/the-final-straw. You can contact us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net.
The ideal city is where the residents have an input in the development, and they know they feel they have an input in the development, and they benefit from the development. And when you have development like that, the spirit of the development is good.